Welcome to another episode of Audio Dust Jacket. I'm your host, Kevin Finn. And our first guest today is Tara Almani with her book, The Character-Based Leader. Welcome, Tara. I hope I didn't butcher your name too bad.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Before we go into your book, give our listeners just a little bit of background on you and why you decided to write this book.
Well, my name is Tara Almani, and I am a speaker, author, and a business consultant. And when I first got online, a lot of my consulting had to do with social marketing. And I got very involved in Twitter at the time and found this lovely community on there called the Lead Change Group. Their hashtag is hashtag Lead Change. And there were conversations going on in there that were just really engaging and inspiring to me. It was, you know, a lot of the conversations were focused around personal accountability and about becoming a character-based leader and about how a lot of the leadership issues that we have today stem from the fact that people aren't taking responsibility for their actions. And so as this conversation developed, it just really sparked an interest in me. And I became a member of the group, and the group grew and progressed. It started as a Twitter conversation, but then became a LinkedIn group and a membership site and a highly active blog. And around May of 2011, we kind of, as a group, asked the question, you know, well, what comes next? And somebody had the idea of co-authoring a book together. So these individuals who all had met originally on Twitter, 21 of us came together and decided to co-author a book. So this is not just my book alone, but one that we all worked on together. And the interesting thing is that by the time the book was published, for the most part, none of us had met one another yet. So, you know, truly a virtual collaboration that shows the power of what character-based leadership can accomplish.
That's so amazing.
Because each one of us had to be responsible for the part that we said we would do.
Well, that is awesome. I think you hit the nail on the head with the problem that we have right now is where did all the leaders go? We don't really have anyone that's a true leader in this generation. What is leadership to you, and why do you think the millennial generation have had problems being leaders?
Well, you know, I think the issue with leadership comes down to the fact that we expect to be able to regulate leadership. We expect to be able to say, these are the rules and you have to follow them. But in actuality, what needs to happen with leadership is leadership needs to be something that's instilled from within. It's something that leadership is most effective when the individual values leadership, values character traits like honesty and integrity, and being able to put others before themselves, and being able to create a vision that people can join in and share. So I think one of the issues when it comes to, you know, the millennial generation in particular has to do with the fact that so often they, they're involved in different activities, but it's everyone can be an expert. Everyone can share what they want to share. And so it's hard to have one individual rise to the top as being a leader. And it's not that a leader has to always be the leader. I think that there's a shifting balance. Even in writing this book, at various points throughout the process, different individuals stood up and became the leaders of that particular stage. And so a leader has to recognize when they are the right person to lead and when they need to mentor and develop other people that can take over when they're done, or simply when they need to step aside for a time and then come back in the project later on.
So you're saying there's different types of leaders. It doesn't always have to be the person that's talking or in making the decisions. There's different types of leadership. Can you talk to that a little bit?
There's certainly different types of leadership. I think the important thing about being a leader is understanding how to communicate a vision that other people can grasp, that other people want to participate in. But a true leader doesn't always have to stand at the front of the pack. A true leader can gather a tribe around them, like Seth Godin talks about, and simply become the facilitator of a conversation. The individual who started the Lead Change Group is a gentleman named Mike Henry Sr. And, you know, he's a wonderful example of a character-based leader because he prompts these conversations without ever putting himself in a position of being the authority or the expert on it. And yet he is our leader because we value the conversations he starts and we want to participate in them. So leadership isn't necessarily about a title. Leadership is about leading from who you are and taking the best of who you are and offering that as a gift to the community around you.
Well, I think
Mike is a great facilitator.
Yeah, I think you touched on it earlier about accountability.
Yep.
And that, I think that's a big thing for a leader when you talked about accountability. I think that's something that this new generation is missing, is they have entitlement and they don't want to take any accountability for anything.
I think every generation has its own flaws, you know, and its own traits. You know, Michael Drew talks about the pendulum and how we go through cycles in society of a me generation, and then it swings back to a we generation because reactionary responsiveness is, you know, me's are all selfish, so let's now be we's, but the we's can only sustain it for so long. So it's one of these aspects where every generation is going to have its flaws, and it's just a matter of understanding not just what the flaws are, but what the strengths are as well, and then as a leader looking to leverage that.
I like that. That's a really good point. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the book, The Character-Based Leader. Tell us a little bit about the book, how it's going to help people, why people should read it.
Well, The Character-Based Leader, as I mentioned, is co-authored by 21 of us, and it's published by the Lead Change Group. It outlines a bit about why character-based leadership is important, what it is, and then has a series of chapters on examples of how or what certain character traits are that character-based leaders have. So, for instance, there's discussions of the relevance and importance of integrity, of trust, of communication, of perseverance. And so each chapter or each section is designed in a way to help the reader look at the relevance in their own life and how they can go about and apply it themselves. And it's really intended to be one of these thought-provoking topics that just get us to look a little more closely at ourselves and how we can become more the leader that we want to be.
That's great. I think it really speaks strongly that you guys basically used what's in this book to create the book. So you use the methods that you talk about in the book as a group to come together and make this book, and I think that's amazing.
It's amazing, and what's amazing to me as well is as much as we all have this core message that we're committed to, and the core message being that, you know, you can make a difference, when each one of us sits down and tries to define exactly the particulars of what character-based leadership is, there's variations throughout the group. And we come from different walks of life and different professions. We have a teacher, we have pastors, we have community leaders, we have leadership coaches. You know, so we all come from different places. Some are titled leaders. They're an owner of a company or whatever else. Some are not. And yet, this commitment to this vision, this commitment to the value that we each can make a difference in the world around us, and our desire is there to do that, makes it a very powerful book.
Do you guys touch on the age-old question of are leaders born or made in the book?
We don't really touch so much on it because, in all honesty, everyone has the capacity to become a leader in some way, shape, or form. One of our co-authors is someone who actually, her book is about being an introverted leader. A lot of people think that introverts, you know, can't be leaders because they don't stand out enough. But everyone has that capacity in them, not to lead in every instance, but to lead from their strengths.
Well, especially in this technology-based day and age with things like Facebook and these more introverted, intelligent people are being great leaders. So what do you want the reader to take away from this book?
I think I want the reader to take away from the book the encouragement that no matter how large or small, the contribution that they make to the community around them is significant. And you don't have to, you know, stand there with a megaphone and be at the head of a large crowd in order to be a leader. We each have our own unique gifts and talents. And looking for ways and areas that you can apply your gift and your talent to support, nurture, or grow a community is a huge thing, and everyone can do it. And when we all take responsibility to make that little change in our neighborhood or in the community around us, all of the collective little changes will be huge.
I love that message. It's just such a great message. Well, thank you so much, Tara, for coming on the show and talking about your book. If our listeners want to go out and purchase this book and get it, and I'm sure it'll fly off the shelves, where can they go get it?
We have a website that is characterbasedleader.com, and so they can go there to be able to purchase the book there.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there any last words for our listeners? Anything that we didn't touch on?
Not that I can think of, but thank you for having me. I've enjoyed being on the show.
No problem. We loved having you, and thank you so much for coming to talk with us. To all our listeners out there, please go out and buy The Character-Based Leader. And Tara. Next up on Audio Dust Jacket is Mary Fran Bontempo with her book, Not Ready for Granny Panties, The 11 Commandments for Avoiding Granny Panties. Hi, Mary Fran. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Kevin. Thank you.
No problem. I didn't butcher your name, did I?
No. Actually, I always tell people it sounds exactly the way it's spelled, and you did a fine job.
That's good. I have a problem with messing up people's names. But let's talk about this book. It sounds, I love the title of it, Not Ready for Granny Panties. Can you give me a little background on you, and then tell me a little bit about the book?
Well, this whole thing started, I was a newspaper columnist with some small local papers for a number of years, and when the newspapers started to go the way of the dinosaur, I kind of felt like I was too, and realized that I had to get onto the internet with my work. So I created a blog initially, which is Not Ready for Granny Panties blog, and it was geared towards women in what I call life's middle ground, who I kind of felt were a sorely neglected demographic on the internet. There were a lot of mommy blogs and all that kind of stuff out there. And the whole intention behind this was to put something on the internet that was really fun for women of my demographic and wasn't going to give them a migraine clicking through 8 million little links to find stuff. And then out of that, the book came really kind of as a response from readers and whatnot, saying that we had sort of struck a chord here. So the book sort of evolved from the blog.
Okay. Well, I love it. Can you tell me about some of these 11 commandments?
Well, first of all, I have to make a statement, and that is that granny panties are as much a state of mind as they are a giant pair of unmentionables. I think what ends up happening for women in life's middle ground is that we can very often become kind of stuck in this rut place where we are sort of navigating these waters between raising adult children who are still not completely independent of us and parents and all that kind of really heavy-duty stuff. And it becomes really easy to get stuck and in these patterns that end up not being healthy for us, where we're not a priority in our own lives. And, you know, you hear all that kind of stuff all the time, but I felt like if I could find a way to bring that message to women in a fun, interesting light, it would stick a little bit more. So I came up with, thanks to my daughter's suggestion, all due credit, with 11 commandments to kind of help women, again, get back to making themselves a priority and just having a little bit of fun. And the first one, thou shalt forget about it.
Yeah, I love this.
It's kind of initially based in the fact that I'm part South Philly Italian.
And
when you're South Philly Italian, you hear forget about it a lot. And it ends up being really good advice. Because as we get older, we forget about things anyway. I mean, I don't know about you, but I walk into rooms all the time with all intent and purpose and get there and go, why am I in here again? And it's because you just, Mother Nature helps you to forget things. But if we do that with intention, if we forget stuff that's not leading us in a positive direction, it clears out a lot of space for us to put other priorities into our lives.
Definitely.
And, you know, those are the kind of things that I was talking about in the book. And all the other commandments are based off of that, too. One of my favorites is thou shalt scare thyself.
I was about to mention that one. That's one of
my
favorites.
Yeah.
I'm looking at them right
that's
now.
To me, that's a really fun thing. Because remember when you were a kid and you loved roller coasters and your friends would jump out at you from a closet and you'd all fall, collapse into a pile of giggles?
Oh, yeah.
Being scared was was fun. But as we get older, especially as women, we're so intent on protecting everybody mm-hmm. from everything that we forget that being scared makes you feel alive. It really connects you to something very basic inside of yourself. So I advise women to scare themselves on purpose. Do things that are a little bit scary, and it really connects you to a place that is just really fun. In the book, I talk about how I took up kayaking a couple of years ago, and although I was given pause when my husband was behind me pushing me into the middle of the ocean in a kayak, he was behind. I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe this isn't a good idea. But it was really terrifying at first, and then all of a sudden it was exhilarating. So I think it's really important that we scare ourselves on purpose and get back in touch with those parts of ourselves that make us feel alive.
I love that. I believe society puts a lot of pressure on women in general, and I think your book is just the right way for people to break out of that.
Well, as I said, thank you, first of all, and that was my intention, to kind of give women permission to be a little bit selfish and to look at themselves and go, okay, you know what? For years now, I've been taking care of my family, my this. I mean, we are our family's retention experts. We're supposed to remember everything for everybody, from, you know, dental appointments to birthdays to anniversary to everything. And there comes a point where you just have to make some space for yourself. And again, doing it in a funny way, it makes it stick. I mean, there's enough preachiness out there. I always say, like, Oprah's got the whole inspiration thing covered. That's not what I wanted to do. I just wanted to give women an opportunity to indulge in something light that ultimately had a really good message for them, which is, it's okay to have fun. It's okay to turn everybody else's stuff back over to them. Because if your kids are in their 20s, it's pretty much time for them to make their own dentist appointments.
I completely agree. I know, as a kid personally, with my mom, she did everything for me. And I did not realize until I moved out on my own how much I had taken advantage of it, and how it wasn't the norm, and how having meal prepared for you every night, or your appointment set, or your laundry done, how I thought that was just, well, that's not much work. That's a lot of work, and kids just take advantage of that.
Yes, yeah, it is. I don't know if it's a matter of, I mean, I'm giving you a little break here, Kevin. I'm going to say
thank
that
you
didn't
thank you.
Take advantage of it, because we set ourselves up to do that. I mean, it's just a natural thing that mothers do. But I think the fact that, you know, the economy's been so terrible and kids have been home for longer, we just continue doing what we always did. And I think that's why we need this change in thinking. Because, yes, if your kids are still living with you, that's okay for, you know, economic reasons or whatever. But they really can do their own laundry. They really can make their own dentist appointments. And you really don't have to make dinner every single night of the week. In fact, if you forget about doing those kinds of things once in a while, it benefits everybody. Because you get a break, and then they learn, as you did, before hopefully they move out on their own and suddenly are left adrift, that it takes some work to manage a life, you know?
Definitely.
And you need to do that. And like I said, my intention was to kind of give women permission to give themselves a break, I guess is what it comes down to.
I love it. Amen to that. I want to talk about one of your other commandments, thou shalt lose control. How much
yes.
control should a mom or a parent lose?
Well, I think that any mother who takes her job seriously is by nature a control freak. I mean, you are the control panel for your family. You run everything. You know who's got to be where. You're an internal calendar. You know all that stuff. And it becomes so ingrained in you that at the time when, again, your kids are getting older and you should be giving those things up, it's almost impossible to do it because you're on autopilot after years of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're on autopilot. And you really need to make an intention to lose the need to control everybody's everything. Because the fact of the matter is, you really can't control it anyway. I mean, when's the last time your day went according to plan?
It never does.
It never does. It never does. There's something's going to throw a wrench in the gears. So the point is, sure, make a plan. If you can help people out a little bit, that's fine. But make a plan, be flexible, and recognize that losing control is about losing your own need to control, and it's also losing your need to control everybody else's everything. Because A, you can't do it, and B, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, it'll just wear you out.
Yeah, exactly. And then you don't have any time left over for yourself. And again, that's what this comes back to. In order to be healthy and women and to really contribute to our families and our lives and ourselves, we have to carve that space out for ourselves. Everybody does. But I think it's hardest for women who've been on autopilot with their families for decades to do that. So it's a matter of bringing awareness to that in a funny way.
Would you suggest maybe the husbands of wives read your book? Do you think they can learn something from it?
Well, absolutely. I have to say, though, that the husbands, I think, do a lot of the things that I recommend in this book quite naturally. One of the things, the second commandment is thou shalt ignore more. And my husband was a master at this. There could have been all sorts of chaos going on around him when the kids were little and screaming and yelling and all sorts of stuff. And he was just able to kind of sit at the table and read the paper and just go do his thing. I call it practicing the Sergeant Schultz rule. I don't know if you remember Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes, but he was in charge of that group of people and the prisoners, and he would always say, I see nothing, I know nothing. And that way he was just kind of able to rise above it all. And my husband was really an expert at that and drove me crazy when I wasn't envying him. But he had that ability to kind of ignore what was going on around him. So I think men, by nature of the fact, again, giving them a break, that we assume control of things, sort of have these things innately in them and an ability to do it. But I also think it's important for them to have an awareness of where their wives are at this point.
Definitely.
And how important it is, again, for everybody to continue on in having healthy relationships, to be able to carve a little space for themselves. And when your wife says, no, I'm not picking up your dry cleaning, she's not being miserable. She's trying to say, you know what, I've got something that I need to do, and this isn't an earth-shattering priority, so maybe you could do that today. So it's a matter of cooperation, too.
I like that perspective.
I don't know if all the husbands will initially.
Maybe you can write a separate book for them.
Yeah. My husband always says that. He always says, I'm going to write a book one of these days. Wait till you see what I have to say. I keep saying, bring it on.
I love that. All right, I want to touch on just one more commandment before we wrap up. Thou shalt engage in idol worship. Explain that one to me.
Yes. Thou shalt engage in idol worship simply means that we live in a culture with American Idol and The Voice and America's Got Talent where we're always trying to crown the next big thing. And what I'm encouraging women to recognize is the next big thing is them. If you've ever eaten the crusts of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, if you've ever tried to cook dinner while you're signing a permission slip and washing a uniform to get somebody ready for a game, you know, if you've ever had to, God forbid, take your mother to the gynecologist, I mean, if you've ever had to do all these things, you are idol worthy, and you need to spend a little bit of time every day worshiping yourself instead of all of these outside kind of things. So every woman has things in her house that she's saving for good or for somebody else, either candles that she hasn't lit or china that she never eats off of or, you know, the good sheets. I don't know what people are waiting for, but the point is to use those things for yourself and indulge yourself a little bit. It's not selfish, it's self-preservation. And it's amazing how much a little bit of self-care goes in just making you a calmer, happier person. And that then in turn translates to all the other relationships in your life.
I love that. This book sounds amazing. How can people reach out? How can the listeners reach out and get your book?
Well, it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. If someone wants to call Barnes & Noble, they can actually get it into the store for them if they prefer not to use the Internet. And they can reach out to me directly through the blog, through the Not Ready for Granny Panties blog.
They just Google that and they'll find it?
Yep, www.notreadyforgrannypanties.com. And we're there. We post new things on the blog almost every single day. I write new columns for it regularly, every week at least. And I love to talk to women who relate to this because it's amazing how many women, after they read this or hear about it, they go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you're saying exactly what I think. So that's very gratifying, and it's nice to know that I'm able to touch people a little bit in that way.
Yeah, I'm glad. I bet they're glad to know that they're not alone.
I think that's it. I think that it's a matter of us this common sensibility that we all have, and it's refreshing to know that. It is refreshing to know that you're not by yourself in this.
Well, Mary, thanks so much for coming on. And to all our listeners, make sure you go buy Mary Fran Bontempo's Not Ready for Granny Panties. Have a great day.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye. Next up on Audio Dust Jacket, we have Melda Beatty with her book, Lime. Welcome to the show, Melda.
Thank you, Kevin. And it's actually pronounced Beatty.
Okay, I was about to say, I always mess up at least one person's name on the show, and I was going to ask you if I did a good job, but it was pretty close.
That's fine.
So, can you go into a little background about yourself? Because I know you have a multitude of skills, and then we're going to go and talk about your book. But let's start with you as a person.
Okay. Well, as a person, I am a mother. I have three beautiful girls, twins, and a 9-year-old. I also teach college composition. I've been teaching English composition for many, many, many years, and I currently teach college composition. But what I'm passionate about and what I love is writing stories, writing plays, writing articles. So that's what I would do even if no one paid me to do it. That's what I do, and that's what I love to do. In addition to that, I also am very much into fitness, so I like to work out and do everything from swimming to cardio classes. And I love to read, so I'm also an avid reader as well.
Well, that's good to hear. I have met writers that don't like to read, and it baffles me.
Yeah, I wouldn't understand why, because these are the people who want someone to read their work. So it's very ironic that they don't like to read. But I guess. But I love to read. It's really what started my whole interest in writing, is reading other writers.
Well, it sounds like you do it all. But let's get into talking about your book. It's called Lime, and it's a very interesting story from everything I've read about it.
Okay, yeah. It deals with a supermodel, and her name happens to be Lime, like the fruit. And essentially, she is biracial. She's Ethiopian-Jamaican.
Green-eyed.
And she gets involved into modeling, not because it's what she wanted to do, but what society wants her to do. And while she's taken this journey through modeling, she discovers domestic violence. She discovers the ugly part of domestic violence and all these women who are being physically abused and emotionally and mentally abused by a man.
So where did you get your inspiration to write about this kind of topic? Because this is definitely not a mainstream topic, but very interesting.
Right, and it's very interesting that you say it's not a mainstream topic, because it happens every day. The notion of, or the reality of domestic violence, women being abused violently. So it's not a personal experience of mine. I'm very thankful for that, but I do acknowledge that it happens. So I was inspired by the fact that it does happen, and by friends of mine and family members who I learned about and who revealed to me that they had been in abusive relationships. And these are women that I never would have thought would have been in an abusive relationship. So coupled that with the fact that I was an avid viewer of America's Next Top Model around the time the idea came to me. And it was that show and the whole concept and fantasy of beauty and fashion and modeling and traveling that kind of basically put those two concepts together and created this story of Lime. And I didn't know, a book. I just knew I had a story idea. But the more I started writing about it, the more I started researching it and talking to people, it easily became a book.
How did you end up developing your character? Because she's very interesting background. How do you do that as a writer?
Well, it's a combination of so many different factors. One, I think about people that I know in my life, people that I don't know, and maybe people in Hollywood or musicians or painters or, artists of some sort. And I just think about maybe a little bit of reality, maybe some of fantasy, what I would conceive an ideal person to be. I knew I wanted to explore different cultures, so I didn't want her to just be a typical U.S. citizen. I wanted her to have this intrigue and mystery and almost like an exotic side to her, and that would make her even that much more appealing to the modeling world. And with regards to the Jamaican and Ethiopian background, I think a lot of it has to do with the language and the beauty of the people. And so I have friends, and I've eaten at the restaurants, and so it's also part of my fascination and love of travel and life outside of the United States. So I just wanted to make sure I had a character that was not only likable on the inside, but also someone very appealing on the outside, too.
All right. With this book, are you? It's obviously an entertaining book, a really good story, but also you're trying to shed light on the fact that this kind of abuse happens more regularly than people would admit.
Would admit, and it happens to women that you would not think would allow themselves to be abused. I think that's what sparked the book. That you know, we hear about the profile of a abused woman. Often, and not always, often she may not have as much education, or maybe her financial situation, or maybe there was some trauma in her childhood that, you know, caused her to engage in these type of relationships. It's when we hear about women who are very educated, who are successful in their careers, who are financially secure. These are women who, you know, your doctors, your lawyers, your teachers, and you find out, or somehow it's revealed, that they have been in some sort of abusive relationship. Now, domestic violence is not just physical abuse. I learned this during my research. It's everything from financial abuse to someone withholding your funds or giving you an allowance or not giving you an allowance to someone who is sexually abusing you. So it just, you know, I keep saying fascinated me, but it just really intrigued me that there are women out there who allow themselves, for whatever reason, to be in these type of relationships.
Do you think it's a society factor? Or because I agree with you, when I think of an abused woman, I have a certain stereotype in my head, and I wouldn't think of someone that's successful and strong, I mean, to be like that.
Yeah, same here. And society, maybe, but maybe I think it has a lot to do with the woman, a lot to do with her internal issues. Now, it's not her fault at all, but I think why she would allow that to happen speaks a lot to her and the choices that she's made, or maybe some things that's happened in her past that she doesn't realize her worth and doesn't look at the fact that whether she's educated or not, you never, ever, ever allow a man to put his hands on you without your permission. And that's a recurrent theme in my book. It's what Lyme and her best friend share amongst themselves, this whole notion of you never let a man put his hands on you without your permission. And again, I don't know if that's societal or not, but it's what needs to happen. It's what needs to be said.
I completely agree. Do you touch on the aspect of emotional abuse? Because I can think that verbal abuse can be just as bad or worse psychologically than physical abuse.
Yes, yes. Lyme, not giving away too much.
Yeah, don't give it away. We want people to buy it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't, I want to leave some intrigue here. Lyme marries early, and in her marriage, it is riddled with emotional abuse. And so that's where it begins for her. And also her relationship with her own mother is abusive in certain ways. So sure, emotional abuse is just as damaging to someone as someone actually putting their hands on you. So all the forms of abuse, I don't think one is worse than the other. Abuse is abuse. And what I'm trying to do and what I'm hoping I am doing through this character and through my book is to shed some more awareness on the topic and maybe even some preventative measures if possible.
That's great. Did you change the person writing this book at all?
I'm sorry, did I change the person?
Yeah, I know writing can be a very intimate process, and you really connect with your characters as a writer myself. So I'm just wondering how this book changed you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, again, I'm not the person out here writing laws or in marches or protests or anything like that, but I know that my level of activism has increased. And what I mean by that is I'm writing a little bit more on the topic. I've done some blogs. I've submitted a few guest blogs about the topic. And what I try to do with my readers is just to maybe pose some, I don't know what you would call them, just questions to think about when it comes to this whole topic of domestic violence, as well as this illusion of what is beautiful in society. You know, we have our thoughts of what is beautiful on the outside, but the whole point of Lyme is to really highlight the beauty within a person and that it's more than what you see. So, you know, I've always felt that way, but this whole notion of being more active in the discussion has been prompted by the fact that I've researched and written this book. And also what I'm hoping to do and what I will do is explore this topic on an international level in my next book. So it will go beyond the United States.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. How far are you into your next book?
I'm as far as thinking about it. Well, I know the beginning and I know the ending.
That's the most important part.
The middle, with all of what I do in my writing, the middle is what comes alive when I'm writing, when I'm researching. So I have plans to, and I will start in the writing and researching of the book, the sequel, in the spring. And I knew I was going to write a sequel as I was writing this book. Things I was reading, things I was hearing made me think that, oh, okay, that has to come next. So this spring, I will begin that process, and hopefully before the year is out or early next year, Lyme 2 will be available.
Well, when you finish that, you have to let us know, and we'll have you back on Audio Dust Jacket. Before we wrap up, tell our listeners how they can purchase your book.
Yes, absolutely. You can go to my website, which is www.meldacreates.com. And, or you could also go to Amazon.com. Just type in Lyme or type in Melda Beatty, and you can get a copy of either the print or the Kindle version
of my book. Could you spell your name for our listeners so they don't mess
it
up?
Sure. M-E-L-D as in David, A, Beatty, B-E-A-T-Y, Melda Beatty.
Well, Melda, thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with that we didn't touch upon?
No, but I want to thank you very much for having a platform for authors to talk about their work. And I just want to encourage readers to get a copy, and not just get a copy, but read it with an open mind and be prepared to ask yourself some tough questions about this whole notion of beauty and domestic violence.
Well, I think that's great. Well, to all our listeners out there, that's Melda Beatty with her book Lyme. Please go out and purchase it. And Melda, thanks again for being on, and hopefully we can have you on for your next book.
I look forward to it, Kevin. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, that brings us to a close of another great show. I'm your host, Kevin Finn. And for everyone here at the Business Radio X family, we will see you next time on Audio Dust Jacket. Have a great day.